I'm really looking forward to this afternoon, and I'm going to try to rip through what I have to say to you, because I am interested in hearing what you have to say to me. And so I'm going to try to cover the ground as fast as possible. I'll have to leave some things out. I would like to have as much interaction as possible, and let's just, you know, if we can just have open season on questions and ideas and everything else, and let's not worry about shaking each other up. I just would like to hear how you guys feel, because often guys go along thinking, mumbling in their beer and not saying anything, and we take that as being assent, agreement, and it's not necessarily true. So if you guys don't give us the feedback, then we're operating in the dark and on assumptions, assuming that you think certain things when in fact you don't. So what I'll try to do is set up the context and give you a report on what we've done roughly in the area of research and where our thinking is at this point and where we plan to go from here, and then we'll just throw open for questions. Just before I came over here, I met Lauren and John, and I said, "Yeah, I'm going over and we'll be talking about the philosophy project." And he said, "Well, you know, one of the fellows made a comment that got back to me that he says, man, he says, I don't understand this philosophy project. He says, I'm in a contact point and having a successful ministry, and I don't have any problems." And Lauren says, "You know," he says, "that's exactly the reason." He said to me, "That's exactly the reason why we need to have a philosophy project. Because if that guy is successful and doesn't really know why he is successful, his chances of having a successful ministry if he goes to, say, Indonesia, lessen. He'll have a difficult time having a successful ministry in another place if he doesn't know why he's doing what he's doing." And so that's really close to the gut issue of the whole project. We're concerned about making the disciple-making ministry mobile in the world and expanding it right off the edge of the graph. And it just takes a lot of thinking to do that. I've been working on the project for about 14 months. And they've been 14 months of tossing and turning in bed and getting up in the middle of the night. Sandy called me into his office, and for the life of me, Leroy, your question is really the key question. You know, why did he throw this thing to me? And I don't know, and I'm not going to try to figure it out. But he said, you know, for a ministry to be successful, you have to have three things. One, you have to have your objectives defined. That tells you what you are doing. Two, you have to define your philosophy. That explains why you're doing what you're doing. And three, you have to go out and produce. You have to go out and do it. Well, he says, we have done number one and number three we are doing, but we have never done number two. Therefore, we do not know whether what we are doing is, in fact, leading us in the direction of the accomplishment of our aim. So if the philosophy is not there, then we do not know whether our ministry on a local level is really moving towards the big objective. And that was about all he told me, about all he really knew how to tell me at that time. And so I left the office in the confusion. And I fooled around with various ideas for a while, trying to figure out, now, what is a philosophy of ministry and how do you come up with one? So I got Lauren's Midnight Ramblings from him. He had a manila folder full of stuff that he'd written between 11 and 4 in the morning in his inimitable scrawl. And so I got a hold of that, and it were just his random thoughts on the philosophy and the direction of the ministry and so on. I spent several days digesting that stuff and deciphering it and trying to come up with Sani's syllogism. You know what a syllogism is? It's a term in logic. You have a basic assumption, and it's the wrong word. But premise, basic premise, secondary premise, and conclusion, and so on. Well, a syllogism is that series of premises and conclusion. Well, I tried to come up with Sanny's syllogism. And after working at it for several days, I managed to put it down in 10 statements, brief statements. Then I took it into Lorne. I said, Lorne, is this your philosophy? And he looked at it and he said, yes. Well, then I thought, well, for control factor, I need to state my own prejudices and my own philosophy. So I went to work and wrote mine and came up with 10 statements. And I thought, well, now maybe the way to do it is to, there are various schools of philosophy in the Navigator, you're all aware of that, to go to sort of the representatives of those schools of philosophy and get theirs. But I thought the problem is, if I had so much trouble figuring out how to come up with a philosophy of my own or state my own philosophy and figure Lorne's out, how will I be able to ask somebody else to do that? So I decided to take the thing on the road instead and begin to interview people. So the approach was this. I would interview an individual, and a number of you have been interviewed, and I would ask basically two questions. What do you understand the Navigator ministry to be? The first one. And the second, what are you doing? Now, the reason you have to ask both those questions, if you only ask a man what he thinks, you're never really sure whether you have his philosophy or not. I read Adolf Eichmann's philosophy one time, and he could have, you know, he was the one that was gassing Jews. Well, he could have been a Sunday school teacher. Sounded great. But what you do really verifies or discredits what you say. See, everything you say is not necessarily a philosophical statement, but everything you do is, because it's motivated by something. And so you would have to find out what a man says, then find out what he does, and compare the two and see if they meet. Now, they never really meet. But sometimes they come close and sometimes they miss by a mile. Well, I went through about 60 interviews. About a third of them were non-Americans. And by that time, I found that further interviews of that nature were becoming redundant because certain issues were surfacing. And they were just there and very apparent. So I changed my tactics on the interviews. And let me just drop that now for a minute. Because simultaneous with that, we took another approach to researching the philosophy project, and it's outlined in this diagram here. We have four basic areas of research, four basic sources of information or data for the research. First is the historical, going back into some of Dawson's old messages, just, you know, the facts of history in the Navigators. The procedures, the systems, the policies, all of those are philosophical statements. Then the interviews, which I just described. And then the fourth is the biblical. Now, the objective here is to analyze the historical context of the Navigators and feed this into it and this information and come up with a model philosophy. In other words, the Navigator philosophy as it exists today. Then we would take the biblical data as it relates to those issues that are surfaced in the model philosophy, compare the two, and we come up with our conclusions. So that's the basic approach. Well, so what we did was we began to trace the evolution of the Navigator philosophy, and this was a very fascinating thing. Dawes started out, and for him it was very simple at the beginning. He would just go talk to people. And for him, the whole ministry consisted of picking up a hitchhiker and laying it on him and getting him to make a decision, and then he'd go on his way. And you all know the story of that. And if you've read the book Dawes, you know that you know the story of how this one guy picked him up the second time, one of his ex-converts, and discovered that the guy didn't have it. Well, now that was a crisis for DOS. And we look back at it now, and it looks like he picked up this guy, talked to him, and the guy obviously didn't know the Lord. And so he thought, the solution is follow-up, and the idea of follow-up was born. But probably it didn't work that way. Probably DOS went through a period of confusion, frustration, doubt, and then the idea of follow-up was born. There was an impasse in his understanding of how to do the ministry. So follow-up came in. Well, after a while, DOS realized that he was a mile wide and an inch deep, and he realized that he had to do something else. And so there was a second impasse. And we could say it would be the second crisis or the second impasse. He needed further insight if he was to go on and accomplish the ministry as he understood it to be. Well, then he came up with the idea of the Minutemen. He needed a few men, kindred spirits, that would do it the way he did it with the same conviction and so on. Heavy emphasis on discipline and a heavy emphasis on picking a few guys and training them carefully. Well, I realize that I'm raining where it's already wet and telling you guys this, but Still, it's important to recognize where we've come from. And one of the things that began to dawn on me is that the central idea in the Navigators is not multiplication. It is not disciple-making. The philosophy of the Navigators, the vision of the Navigators, was born out of a question that DOS did not state in so many words in the early days, but later on he did. The question is, how do you best make Christ known in the world? And I think it's important to realize that that is the underlying question in the Navigator movement. How does one best make Christ known in the world? Now, it's important to make that distinction because it makes a world of difference when you project that on out into infinity. Okay. Well, then the war broke out, and DOS saw this ministry spread, and he went through the frustration of not being able to be at the scene of the action. So he was heavy on materials. The idea of the key man on a ship was there, and that was one of the essential ideas in the ministry during the war. He had his key man on a ship. He did everything through that individual. Well, all that time, he sort of fretted about the quality of the ministry or the quality of what was going on in the lives of the men on those ships and bases. But then during when the war was over, he felt that, boy, you take these hundreds and thousands of military men who have gotten down to business for God and infiltrate them back into society and an impact will be made. But it didn't quite work out that way. And he began to realize that these men were absorbed into society and the impact came from the other direction. That they lost the distinctive vision that they had acquired through their influence with the Navigators. Now, just a parenthesis here. I think that maybe from the perspective of a longer perspective of history, we will realize that a deeper impact was made than perhaps was recognized at that time. It's especially apparent as you go around the world and find out who the missionaries are around the world. You know, some Navy guy that came to Christ through the Navigators. But anyway, he was envisioning, DOS was envisioning a certain kind of impact that did not happen. Well, the next important thing was in 1948, DOS took a trip around the world. And he realized that two things came out of that trip. One, the Big Dipper illustration, which was a summary of the Navigator philosophy as of 1948. The other was the idea of producing reproducers. And he came back, and this is in the book DOS also, and I verified it from other sources. He came back, and he was excited about the idea of producing reproducers. And he got a few guys around, like Don Rosenberger, Sani, I don't know who else was there, Scotty, and he shared the idea of producing reproducers. And then it says he was surprised at the amount of biblical content that could be brought to bear on the idea. Now, that was sort of a disturbing thought for me. because I realized, it became apparent, that both the idea of follow-up and the idea of producing reproducers did not come. Neither idea came from an inductive study of the Bible, but it came from a pragmatic analysis of what needed to be done next. Then the Bible was brought in to support the idea. Now, we all know what's wrong with that, don't we? Well, this was disturbing to me until it occurred to me that in the Scriptures, God has led most of his men over the years that way. No man is intelligent enough to sit down and figure out, now, this is what I've got to do, and go and do it. But, so Doss was a man of God, and a man of prayer, and God led him. And of course, when God leads, it is not in conflict with his word. And so, of course, it would be biblical. But, I'll come back to this idea a little bit later, because it has implications for us now. Well, let me pick up the thread again of the history. Then, another idea that came out of the 1948 trip was the fact that we've got to have a staff. But he liked to talk in terms of a small, mobile, global striking force. And so he thought of this small staff that would go to places without a whole lot of permanence and get something going and move on. Well, I may be skipping over a few things here, but then Doss died, of course, in 1956. And the next significant thing in the evolution of our philosophy was a trip that Lorne took in 1957 around the world with Rod Sargent. And Lorne came back with this observation. He said, it's a big world, and there are lots of people out there. We need a big staff. Well, that had quite an impact on our mode of operation. And about the same time, Leroy was working out the idea of the grassroots ministry. And this was another significant contribution to the philosophy of the Navigators, where he came up with the idea of building your own team, kind of flying your own flag on a campus, and the emphasis on evangelism. And when I came into the Navigators, the question was, where's your man? And so, you know, you'd look around, where's my man? I'd get a nice, warm Christian bod, and he'd be my man. And pretty soon I'd be asking him, where's your man? And he'd get another Christian boy. And so you'd have 10 generations of Christians, and we'd prove multiplication that way. And I would wonder, well, when do we stop just reorganizing the kingdom of God and begin to add to it, contribute? So Leroy, I think, broke through that. And that was a significant contribution to our philosophy. Well, then the next significant thing was in 1961, we sat down and wrote our objective out for the first time. And they had several men from overseas. They sat down. Maybe some of you men were there. Bordy was there. But they spent about 2 weeks writing out that philosophy or that objective. Well, okay. Now, as soon as you write something down, then you begin to make an exegesis of it. You know, what does it mean? And the next significant thing was in 1963, where we had a training philosophy conference, a philosophy of training conference. That was 1964, I believe. And at the time, when it was over, nobody agreed that it was a good conference. Everybody thought it was a bummer. And very kind of distressed by it, and we just kind of chalked it off as a loss. But looking at it from the perspective of history, it had a very significant influence on what we have done since 1964. Every word of that conference is recorded, and it's in a fat book like this. Looks like a Los Angeles phone book. And we went through that word for word and sorted out what was really going on there. And it was very interesting because instead of really discussing the philosophy of training, really there's very little philosophy of training discussion in that conference. What was discussed was the exegesis of the Navigator aim. And there seemed to be two different concepts or two different definitions of the Navigator aim. Didn't seem, I don't mean seem, there was. One called for a narrow definition of our aim. Basically, we are going to major on reps. As a matter of fact, I can read the two definitions here if I can find it rather quickly. Let's see. Yeah, here we are. One group, the philosophy was this. Our specific objective is producing reproducers. But relatively few have the potential of being producers or reproducers. Therefore, these few will almost invariably become navigator representatives. Therefore, our objective is to produce nav reps. Well, now, Lorne was not satisfied with this. And I have a page of statements that he made September 25, 1964 at 7:30 in the evening, and so on. Statements that he made indicating that he was trying to convince the fellows to have a broader definition. And Sandy's definition at that time was, or his syllogism was more or less this: we want quality laborers. Now, the ultimate level of labor is a producer of reproducers. Now, in the process of producing reproducers, we will produce all kinds of quality laborers. And so he was looking for the emphasis to be on the broader, the laborer. Well, they just couldn't seem to get off dead center on that thing. Well, then, in a discussion, or rather in a paper, Chuck Farah asked a casual question. I'm reading from it here. He said, could we say this? Could we say that in the process of training producers of reproducers, all of these other objectives will also be met? Now, that apparently was the germ idea for an assumption that we've been operating on since 1964. That idea being that in the wake of producing reps, we will make a broad impact. And so there were comments that indicated that this really was the way the thing was resolved. And so in many men's minds, it was this. It doesn't really matter whether a person has a broad or a narrow exegesis of our aim, because the broader thing will happen whether we do or not. So the assumption that we have been operating on since 1964 is this, that the broader impact will be made in the wake of producing the men and the money, the resources for the overseas, or for the global work. Now, that's about where our philosophy is at this point. I'll just add one more thing. When the three divisions were established here in the USA, there were three different emphases in those three divisions. The Northern Division, the emphasis was on training. The Southern Division, the emphasis can be summed up by the Crunchbird joke, emphasis on recruiting and relationships. And in the Western Division, the emphasis was on evangelism and always getting the gospel out. Well, as I observe that, I feel that's beautiful, because those three philosophies, or those three emphases, rubbing on each other, produces a good mix and good balance. And this brings me to an observation which I just want to make in passing, and that is that we often think of unity as being uniformity, and we strive for uniformity so that we can hold together. But they are not in the same ballpark. Unity is based on something far greater than just uniformity of ideas. And one of the things we need to discover is how to allow all kinds of diversity and still maintain the unity and be cohesive. And another incidental observation is this, that it's been interesting as I've gone around and interviewed and as I've observed the ministry, that there really is a lot of diversity. Now, some guys are kind of struggling under a structure that's tighter than they want it to be. Other guys they feel that, well, man, you know, I can do anything I want. Some guys really feel they have latitude, some guys don't. That's just the way I think it goes. But I've been impressed and really surprised at the amount of diversity in the Navigator ministry here in the USA. and also overseas. I think it's a healthy sign, not a bad sign. And we want to encourage more of that, not discourage it. Well, that's pretty much our the evolution of our philosophy. Now, I've made several observations as a result of this study. One is this, that an organization tends to take a snapshot of the founder's philosophy at the point of his death and say, I'm going to be faithful to that. And I've had guys say, well, I can do Dawson's vision and I can do Sani's vision. Or another guy will say, well, I'm loyal to Dawson's vision, implying that the current vision is sort of an apostate vision. And we tend to take a snapshot of the founder's philosophy and then stick to it. Not realizing that had that founder lived, he himself would not have been faithful to it. Because he spent his whole life picking up and discarding ideas. And he would go through ideas one after another. But all of a sudden, we feel that we have to honor those ideas. Now, if we're going to honor the philosophy of the founder, it would be to have a dynamic philosophy. Because as soon as your philosophy becomes static and loses its dynamic, you're dead. You're going to be an institution. I'd just like to repeat one other observation that I made here that came out of this. And that is that the central idea in the Navigators is making Christ known in the world. And I think we need to be careful to make sure that we have our priorities straight on that point. And another observation that came out of both the study of the evolution of the philosophy and the interviews was this. I asked the question to myself, well, now, where are we in our philosophy? And I would like to propose to you that just as Doss was at an impasse when he picked up the same guy twice, just as he was at an impasse when he realized that follow-up is not sufficient, we are today at an impasse. Because evangelism by itself is not the complete story, nor is follow-up evangelism plus follow-up the complete story, nor is evangelism plus follow-up plus disciple-making as we practice it today the complete story. We are once again at an impasse. Now, that is not negative. It is just the facts of life, and we'll be at other impasses in the future. That's just the way it goes. Now, the impasse, I can state it in just so many terms, in these words, is that our lay laborers are not laboring. Our non-staff laborers are not laboring. Now, that's sort of a... Now, that's a hypothesis. That was a hypothesis for a period of time, and I'm sure that you fellows read the Dear Gang letter that Jim Downing sent out, where he gave those 17 points, and that was one of them. What happened with that letter was that Downing, I was on my way out of town, Downing said, I'd like to put something in there on the philosophy project, and I said, well, here's my workbook. Do what you want. And so he looked through it and found these 17 points, which were just little notes that I was making to myself, and they were scattered all over the Navigators. And I did not mean them for public consumption, but that's okay, because I began to get some feedback, and it was helpful. Now, let me just give you some evidence for this hypothesis, or let's say, now I'm just making an assertion. We have 40 years of history. Last year, for the first time, we measured our basic workforce. Our basic workforce consists of 2,349, if I remember correctly, individuals. A basic workforce, a person in the basic workforce, is a person who is tied into the Navigator ministry, a disciple maker, rather, who is tied into the Navigator ministry. Now, of that 2,349, 245 of them are staff. Now, another fact is that we're producing about 800 disciple makers every year. So this total of basic workforce of 2,000, let's say 2,400, is really the sum total of 3 years' production. Well, now you say the basic workforce is people that are tied into the navigators. How about the rest that have gone on out? Well, we're trying to check that out. And one of the things that we've done, and you men are aware of this, is that we have tried to get a hold of the names of all of the disciple makers that have appeared on all the lists since we began to measure disciple makers. And Raja here is doing a study. He has a degree in sociology and knows how to do this kind of thing, has done a good job. He's doing a study for the purpose of finding out what our disciple makers are going through when they get out away from the navigator context. Now, the problem is we have a very short history, and this is not telling us a whole lot, because I think our most recent, Raja, what is it? The oldest ones are 1970? Yeah. So that's not long enough for the rubber to hit the road. But we are getting some trends and patterns. Another thing that called my attention to this hypothesis of the impasse was in the interviews. I would ask two questions. I would ask what the position of the staff man was in the accomplishment of the aim. And obviously the answer is, well, if we're going to plan a ministry,